Mike and Miana gather playing some game. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Miana gather playing some game. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for episodes 5 and 6 of Survivor Edge of Extinction. My name is Liana Boris, and don't worry, no map folding required here as we break down everything that happened in this double episode of Survivor. So, quick programming note, Mike Bloom is not here, but no worries, he will be back laughing at any victim of a double tribal council soon. But let me welcome in our double guests for this double episode. You've heard these two lovely ladies before here on the RHAP B&B. They've also guested on Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast. And of course, they host their own wonderful Harry Potter themed podcast. Please help me welcome in the Real Weird Sisters, Martha and Alice. Welcome to the B&B.
Woo! Can't wait to talk Survivor. And it's very exciting to be back. This is Martha, just for people to get acquainted with our voices here. I haven't been on for a whole season and a half, so it's great to be back on the B&B.
Yeah, we're so happy that we can stay for free here. And we feel really lucky that we got such a great two episodes that we get to talk about. We're so excited.
I planned that. Save them just for you guys. You're welcome. Mike doesn't deserve to talk about these two episodes.
He doesn't. Well, this is for family. It's not for Mike, and it's dang sure not for Rick.
That's right. Yeah. Screw you, Rick and Chris and Reem.
And Mike.
And Mike, especially Mike. Okay, so I want to start off, as we do every episode, by getting your thoughts on sort of this season in general, and then, of course, we'll talk about the episode. So, Alice, what have you been thinking so far about the Edge of Extinction?
I have really been enjoying this season, especially after last night. I think that really cemented it for me. But I just think it's a really great cast, and it's been a really fun story so far. And then as far as the Edge of Extinction twist goes, I think that that's turned out to be really fun, too. Like, that is a hot pile of garbage. So I like steaming like reality TV trash when they're all fighting. Like, that was just fun last night. So I've really been enjoying it, and I'm just excited to see where it's going to come. Where it's going to go from here.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really interesting point about the Edge of Extinction. And I don't know, Martha, if you co-signed this, but it did feel like trashy reality TV. Like, I feel like Survivor sometimes sets itself apart. Like, oh no, you know, we're kind of better than all of that. But the Edge of Extinction really was just like people yelling at each other.
Yes, they're just totally falling apart. And I was like, I'm just recently teaching Lord of the Flies in one of my classes. So I was like, very much like, this is like, they are going crazy. Like, they have formed their own society, and they are literally like turning into Lord of the Flies here. Like, Keith is like forming his own tribe, and it's just like, it's just really entertaining to watch. And I feel like it's like the most microcosm of society kind of craziness that we've had on Survivor in a long time.
Yeah, I like, when I was watching it last night, it really hit me, like, this is kind of what we used to get from Survivor before people knew better. And I think that now these people, like, they're not really sure what's going to happen to them. Like, they think they might go back into the game, but they probably realize that they're not going to be going into the game with others from the Edge of Extinction. So they kind of don't care at all, like, if they're being polite or anything. Like, they're not trying to really preserve their image in the eyes of the other people. So I think that that's setting us up for some really fun drama that we haven't seen in a long time, like Martha said.
Yeah, you kind of see everything slowly devolve also. So, you know, okay, obviously, Reem and Keith really didn't greet Chris the best way, but it feels like as things move along, like, it's just more and more chaos, which is probably, yeah, indicative of this idea that, well, screw these people. I mean, Keith was the first evidence of this, you know, just runs off like, it can't be all of us, right? Because the fact that so many people keep showing up, they're like, well, all seven of us are going to go back to the game? Yeah. No way.
Yes.
I know. And I love the, like, how much it brings out the, like, dog eat dog type mentality of, like, these people really fighting for themselves only. And, like, that's kind of the point of Survivor. But I think that you have to be nice in order to win, like, to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. So we don't always get to see, like, this true, like, vicious side of human nature.
Plus they're like literally starving. I mean, they've had like one fish the entire time since Reem's been on the island. You could just see Reem is like, and I love Reem like anybody else, but you can just see that she's like deteriorating. Like she is so tan. Her hair is like starting to fall out. And I mean, she looks great. Don't get me wrong, but I just feel like Reem, especially, she's been there for so long that you can just see the visible toll that the island is taking on her.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really evident to me in a couple episodes ago when she'd been on the island for 6 days and then she finally got rice. Like she just ate a little bit of a coconut. That's all she was living on. And of course, Keith is like, you know, why are you like coming up the steps with me? She hasn't eaten, dude. Like,
oh, that's disappointing, dude.
That's disappointing, dude.
Yeah, that was such a great quote. Well, so I want to talk a little bit more about The Edge of Extinction, just because I feel like there were a lot of people, myself included, that were, you know what? This is a lot of fun. We actually really can sort of get behind this. Now, we're all still, I think, waiting for the shoe to drop a little bit, but mm-hmm. the other shoe to drop. But I think this was fun. I especially want to talk about Keith on The Edge of Extinction. The whole lines about, like, this is exactly why we voted him out. I mean, Keith is like, this is for family. This is not for Chris. All of that was so good. I thought it was so entertaining.
Yes, we were laughing so hard when we watched the episode. Like when they're like, okay, we have to make a pact. We're not going to go off on our own. And you just look at Keith's face and he's like rolling his eyes and like,
oh my gosh,
his head.
It was so, so funny. Like he was not having it. He was so sassy looking. It was amazing.
And then we cut to him like admitting that he wouldn't have been able to get the clue on his own. But then he's like, but I'm taking it. it was perfect editing. It was such an entertaining moment.
Oh,
it was
man.
Great.
Oh, well, and that's like with the, you know, the lack of food on, yes, in the regular game of Survivor, obviously people talk about, oh, your body starts to shut down because you're not getting food. But on The Edge of Extinction, I mean, that must be rough. Like the fact that Rick just is like, hey, let's fold it in front of everybody. You know, that you don't even stop to think about mm-hmm. that this might be a bad move just because you're sort of so exhausted.
Yeah, so exhausted. And then you're also not like you're not really in the game, even though you are. So like, I think people have just like all of their best intentions have gone out the window. So it and like, yeah, they're just pushed to their limits. So it's just so funny.
Yeah, although I feel like Rick was the only one maybe like actually sort of playing Survivor in that moment where I think he felt like he had to be nice and like share it with them because it was kind of awkward. It would have been awkward for him to like go off on his own in that moment. Although we were like yelling at the TV, like, don't share that with them.
Yeah. Like, what was he thinking? Like, oh, like nobody was, I mean, maybe a couple of them would have gotten that, the folding the map thing, but like he got it so quick. And if he wouldn't have said anything, he would have had such a big head start over most of the rest of them.
Yeah, but I feel like he was still in that like group mindset where like we're still a team, we have to work together kind of thing, where I don't think that's what you should be doing on the extinction.
Maybe just because he had been there the least amount of time.
Yeah, exactly.
So he was still like the most game oriented at that point and like the most like team oriented.
Yeah.
Where the rest of these people have been like fighting for themselves for days already.
Yeah, he hadn't fully acclimated to the Lord of the Flies paradigm that is the Edge of Extinction.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
oh my God.
The other thing with Edge of Extinction, like, I think it, like you said, Liana, like, we're all kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, it's been, like, at first it was like, okay, this is fine. Like, everybody kind of went in, like, worried, like, this has the potential to be bad, but it was like, okay, it's been okay so far. And then it's gotten so good, like, in the last couple of weeks. But I just think that, like, I think it has the potential to be really good for this season. I hope they don't overdo it. And then I also really hope that they don't do it again too soon,
mm-hmm.
because then people are going to start counting on it. And then we're going to lose that element of, like, true, like, unedited drama, I guess.
Yeah, and another interesting thing is, like, I think I've seen some buzz about this, but, like, once they've had somebody come in at the merge, then everybody playing is going to know about it, like, if it continues post-merge as well. So it's going to be a different, feel on Edge of Extinction, and then as well with the people who are playing, like, who are still in the game as well. So I feel like this is the like purest version that we're going to get of it mm-hmm. ever. And I love it.
Yeah. And yeah, like you're probably right, because like people are going to start being a little bit more cautious about how they vote people out and stuff. So that's kind of the downside of Edge of Extinction for the second half of the game. But hopefully we won't see that too much affecting the game.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, the exciting part about this is the fact that it is completely unknown. Well, to both us and to the people who are playing. And so you could see a situation where when they have a better idea of, well, how is this going to work for the jury, right? Because maybe somebody coming back still has to have some semblance of teamwork with the people that are on the edge of extinction, because maybe they would be voting for the winner in the end. Like, we have no idea really how this is going to work in terms of how people are going to return. I mean, we're making the assumption it's only going to be maybe one or two, but how is this going to work in terms of the jury? I mean, like, I have no idea.
And so
once we sort of see all of that unfold, then I think if this is implemented again, some of that novelty is gone. So I don't know. But for right now, I mean, I'm definitely enjoying all the craziness on the Edge of Extinction.
Definitely. Yeah.
So, well, let's talk a little bit about maybe the regular good old fashioned game of Survivor. And let's get into our preseason predictions. So Mike and I both wrote down preseason predictions about how we thought the players in the game of the Edge of Extinction would do, sealed them away, and we are now opening them as those players are going home. So tonight we are going to, today, whenever you're listening to this, we are going to reveal our predictions about Aubrey and Windy. So obviously Mike is not here. So thankfully I have Martha and Alice who will be subbing in for Mike to read his prediction. So I'll go ahead and kick things off talking about Aubrey. So here's what I had predicted for Aubrey. I had her making the finale, and I said there are three things certain in life: death, taxes, and Aubrey making the finale on Survivor. Aubrey is left without her ally, Kelly, who has just idled out of the game. And Aubrey tries everything she can to regain control of the game, but the other women in the Praying Mantis Alliance are firmly against the vets getting to the end for fear of losing to them. Aubrey puts up a good fight in the immunity challenge, but falls short. Like she does every season. Aw, I made myself sad.
Yeah, if only.
Yeah, if only. Okay, so Martha, what did Mike predict for Aubrey in the game?
Okay, and I won't do a Mike impression here, because I don't think that that would be flattering to either of us.
You should give it a shot.
No. So according to Mike, Aubrey makes the finale, forms a tight female alliance on Kama, but has a frenemy relationship with Aurora. Unfortunately, does not add any immunity wins to her one victory from Game Changers. I'm glad I'm reading this, because we will gif her singing and dancing at least three times over the course of the season. If Alice was reading it, she would pronounce it wrong. Like Game Changers, ends up on the wrong side of the vote going into the finale and falls as a result. And plus side, will name drop Cochrane at least once.
Okay.
So Alice, what do you think of these two predictions?
Okay, so clearly neither of you quite had the right idea of what was going to happen to Aubrey. Although, well, we don't really know for sure.
That's true.
Possible that she could end up in the finale if she gets back into the game. But at this point, it doesn't seem like she's going to be. So that's sad, because I really was rooting for Aubrey. But let's see. I think, Liana, I do think that there was one element of truth in what you said, and that was that the other women... I guess it was just one, but she fell victim to a Praying Mantis alliance. And I think that that Praying Mantis alliance was Victoria.
Yes,
and
queen.
So she kind of is the, I feel like she was definitely the reason that Aubrey had her downfall, and she definitely hoodwinked Aubrey. So I think that your prediction, Liana, was actually pretty accurate in some ways.
And so I assume that means that I get the point.
You do get the points.
Yay!
From me.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. Again, welcome back anytime. Anyone who gives me points. I want to talk about the woman for a second, and that is Victoria. I just, to pull the wool over someone's eyes, a player like Aubrey, I mean, my God, the woman must be an incredible actress, right? I mean, how Aubrey didn't even sense that anything was wrong. I mean, at least we didn't get to see any of that.
Yeah, she was amazing. I mean, Victoria was. And both Alice and I were not that high on her going into last night's episode. But like after this, we're totally sold, at least for sure I am. She was amazing. She was stone cold. Like, she was just such a killer in that. And I mean, Aubrey, like you said, is such an intuitive, observant person. Like, that's what she's known for, is like seeing through this kind of thing. And she completely bought it. So huge props to Victoria.
Yeah, she was really incredible. I want to give her all the credit I can. I mean, I think Gavin and Eric also did a great job of, you know, not blowing up the story, but it was clearly Victoria's idea. Mm-hmm. And she's the one who had to do the heavy lifting as far as convincing Aubrey that she was in an alliance with her. And like she, like I said, it was her idea in the first place. So you're right. Like, it took some great acting. And I think what it boils down to is I think that she just really is like stone cold. And she said it in her interview that she really didn't care. Like, she didn't really feel bad at all. And that was very apparent, because she did not seem to have to overcome any sort of moral dilemma to be able to lie to Aubrey like that.
Yeah, seriously. I wonder how she would be perceived if she were to be in a final tribal council. Like, if she's sitting at the end and she just kind of is that stone cold person, I wonder if people would respect that, or if they would sort of feel betrayed by her. I mean, Aubrey has such a great attitude when it comes to the game, and was able to immediately give credit to the players who voted her out. But I think that would be something that I'd be very interested in seeing.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's interesting with Victoria, because I don't think we've seen this archetype be that way very often. Like, oftentimes we could have like maybe more like a male game bot would be more typically in this like stone cold position, or even sometimes like I'm thinking of like Dawn, who's obviously not stone cold, but like people were really betrayed by her when she made stone cold moves. Victoria, I feel like she has kind of this like goofy persona where people feel like they're all her friend, but then I could see them feeling a little bit betrayed by the stone coldness of her gameplay. But at the same time, if they treat it like Aubrey did, then I mean, I think Victoria's gold in the final.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of times what it comes down to is just like being kind of consistent with how you portray yourself, I guess. So I agree. I do think people find her to be friendly, but I don't feel like it would come as much of a blindside in the end if it turned out that she was like this stone cold strategist, because I feel like if along the way she's doing these moves, like people will see it and they will respect her for it. I think that people run into trouble when they start like waffling on decisions and, you know, crying about it and stuff, which I mean, I understand why they do that, but I think that that's what makes people resent them more in some ways. So I don't know. As long as Victoria doesn't be like unnecessarily cruel to people or like mean about personal things, I think that she could still stand a pretty good chance in the end.
Yeah. And so far, she doesn't really seem to be. I mean, she's just very straightforward with her cold stoneness. And I think that that is something that I think would be respected. But to go back to the point about, I guess, information being spread about her moves. Now with the Edge of Extinction, you know, I'm sure that the players out there sharing the stories of how they were voted out. I mean, potentially, I don't know, maybe because they think that there might be some chance for them to get back into the game, they might withhold some of that information. But you could have, you know, even more of a dissemination of almost the lore of certain players. It's like Victoria was the one who took out Aubrey. You know, she's the one that gets credit, or maybe it's Eric or Gavin or all three of them equally. And so those stories can then spread to almost a wider range of people. And we might see that have an impact in the final vote.
Yeah, I mean, especially with Wendy coming off the same like same week as well, like the two of them were both betrayed, I guess, by those same three. So I could definitely see that the two of them talking about those three to the rest of the people on Extinction Island, and maybe for better or worse, like it could be like they get this like good reputation as like really awesome strategists, or it could be like they're huge threats that need to be taken out. So
I think like we see this on Big Brother a lot, and I won't talk about Big Brother too long, but like we've had a lot more people re-enter the game on that show. And I think, you know, sometimes they get information in the jury house that then they use. Well, that's always kind of the hope, is that they're going to blow up everything when they come back in. We really haven't actually seen that pan out too often. But I think that, like, you know, you could have a situation where someone like Chris comes back in the game, and ordinarily he wouldn't have really known anything about Victoria and Gavin and Eric, but he could come in now knowing stuff that he could tell to his allies who would have known nothing about them.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I didn't even think about that. Whoa. Talk about the other shoe dropping. I guess we'll see. Well, so let's talk about Windy. So Alice, do you want to read what Mike had predicted for Windy?
Sure. Okay. So Mike wrote that he predicted that Windy would make the jury. She'll find an idol and has the cutest reaction ever and then proceeds to tell someone. Initially, she gets targeted due to perceived weakness, but her positive attitude gets her in a good place socially. She gets perceived as a relative... it's kind of hard to see where I'm sitting. Gets perceived as a relative non-entity strategically, ends up going out due to a rogue advantage. And she wins at least one individual challenge.
Well, what I will say for that is she did sort of end up going out through a rogue tribal council, yeah. Sort of.
don't give advantage. Mike any more points, though, Liana.
Right. Sorry. I mean, makes the jury. Come on.
Come on, Mike. What were you thinking?
Okay. So I was a little less optimistic for Windy's chances. I had her pre-jury, and I said that Manu is on a losing streak, and Windy isn't doing them any favors. Her unbridled energy causes her to be the biggest liability in the challenges, and that's saying something considering David Wright is also on her tribe. Windy also has a propensity for getting into shenanigans, aka idol hunting and generally sneaking around. Wish I had written chicken releasing, but unfortunately not. So while the tribe will say they are trying to keep challenge strength, really, they just found Windy super annoying and super extra. Windy is voted off to Exile Island, where she will annoy a new group of players.
Exile Island, Liana, wrong season.
Yeah, there's a lot of like random names.
Just kidding. okay, well, obviously, I mean, I don't want to bury the lead here, but Liana, you did have a lot more correct predictions, obviously. Pre-jury, a pretty good prediction on Manu losing and being on a losing streak. Interesting that both you and Mike said that she was going to have perceived weakness. It's interesting that she ended up being like actually kind of a beast in the challenges. But I have to say, you had a lot more correct predictions than Mike did. And it's not just because he's not here, but I think you're going to have to win this one as well.
Yes. Okay. I completely agree.
Of course.
But I mean, yeah, I was actually really, this is a person who, as the weeks went on, because I knew what I had written for my sealed prediction, and I was like, there's no way. I was like, I just based on her preseason stuff, I just felt that this is where she had to go. And with all her shenanigans with the chickens, which it's crazy, the fact that it took, you know, a tied tribal council for her to eventually be voted out, because essentially the threat of rocks. Yes. Like, that's really all it took for her to, to finally like get out of the game.
Well, seriously, every week, Alice and Paul would be like, who do you think is going to go? And I would always be like, I kind of feel like it's got to be Windy this week. And until last night, like the Wednesday episode.
Well, you said that.
I thought it was going to be Victoria going at the Rocks.
But you said Windy at the first tribal council.
I said Windy at the first tribal council. And I was like, okay, I've made it this far. Like, I don't think it could be Windy anymore. So, but no, she definitely had that like reputation preseason. Like, I definitely felt like she was going to be one of the first to go and didn't want her to be because she seemed really entertaining. And she obviously exceeded my expectations and then some. But I do think that this was about the best case scenario for her that we could have seen.
Yeah. I mean, I think she's like definitely comes across as annoying and has her social problems. But I think she's like pleasant enough and entertaining enough that she didn't rub. Like, she was able to stay in. Like, I feel like if she had just been slightly more annoying and slightly more hard to live with, then she probably would have gone. But she just kept it right below that threshold.
And she also was very physical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed watching her. She was so fun. And I love her. She's so cute. And yes. She's so just like,
bubbly.
I love how bubbly she is and how, like, what a positive attitude she has. So I really like her.
Her exit was awesome.
She also was somebody who, within that first episode, she endeared herself to me, you know, because we got to see a little bit more about her, her personal, because she is Tourette's, right? Like a mild form of Tourette's, I think.
Yes.
And so that was nice to see. And yeah, I think it was she released the chickens, and I'm sure that people were frustrated about that, but clearly it wasn't enough to vote her out. Like, people weren't actually mad enough. So there must have been something about her that was endearing enough to keep her around, that probably coupled with her strength in the challenges.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think she was like an non-predicted challenge beast. Like she was a really good swimmer and really like fast and stuff. So I think she was no slouch in the challenge, especially compared to a lot of people on her tribe.
Yeah, I mean she was lucky in the sense that she had a couple of like sort of like buffer people ahead of her that were putting themselves out there even more than she was, being more annoying than she was in Reem and Keith. But once you get to that point, then you start to look at like who's a threat. So then she wasn't so much in the foreground for who they would be voting out. So she played, I mean, really, like, she did very well for all the predictions people made about her preseason.
Yes.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah. She like surpassed this. She wasn't annoying enough to be one of the first votes. Uh-huh. And then she wasn't a threat enough to then be one of the next like set of votes.
Exactly. Yeah. She was in a great spot. I mean, like people always say, like, I feel like this type of a situation with the double tribal, like that's a situation where people are oftentimes say, oh, so-and-so got screwed by that twist. And I haven't heard a lot of people saying that about Wendy, but I mean, it kind of is true for her personal game, because I think if she would have just kept playing the way she was playing, she would have lasted a lot longer. Mm-hmm. And so she did sort of get screwed by the twist, even though she wasn't playing a great game. I mean, for her, the way she was playing, it kind of did screw her.
Yeah, I mean, because it seemed like Lesu was probably would have been in last place, mm-hmm. if the two tribes had not gone to tribal council. So yeah, probably it would have been one of Lesu. But yeah, that's a great point. I haven't heard anybody talk about like, oh yeah, she was screwed by the double tribal, even though, you know, Malcolm really got a lot of that when he was voted out in Game Changers. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Alice, you have brought a discussion question for us. What is it that you want to talk about?
Okay, so mine is a ding, marry, kill, one of my favorite things that RHAP likes to do. And so this is not with people, though. This is just going to be with the twist. So we talked a lot already about the Edge of Extinction, but my three contestants here are Edge of Extinction, Redemption Island, and the Outcast twist.
Okay, so ding, marry, kill on Edge of Extinction, Redemption Island, and the Outcast twist.
Yep.
Okay, well, I mean, I'll go ahead and throw out my initial thoughts. I would have to marry Edge of Extinction right now.
I'm feeling that way too. I feel like they or the Edge is definitely providing a very stable source of entertainment for me, and definitely I feel like it's the best of the three.
Yeah. As far as if you were a contestant, I mean, this isn't what the question is, but if you were a contestant, I feel like this might be the worst one.
Yeah, definitely.
But as from a viewer's perspective, I agree with that, too. I would marry that one.
Okay. I mean, it could also be just the honeymoon period is still going on right now. So wait till you hit year 7 of the Edge of Extinction twist. Yeah. You may be feeling differently.
Right. Let's not get too excited, but.
Okay. But for now, we'd marry it for now. Okay. Martha, what do you think for ding or for kill?
Personally, I'm actually like a stan of the Outcast twist as much as you could be a stan of that twist. When I watched Perlouds the first time, which was, it was one of my first seasons that I watched when I was just getting into Survivor for the first time. And I remember like watching the Outcast twist that episode and being like, this is amazing. Like I love this so much. And I texted Alice and Paul that day and I was like, oh, I love the Outcast twist. And they were like, seriously? So I personally think that I've got to ding the Outcast twist because it's a pretty sexy twist to me.
Well, and it's something that we saw once and we haven't seen again. Like, I almost feel like this is your one night stand type ding, right? Whereas Redemption Island, you know, we see it so many times.
There's no surprises there.
Well, I was going to say, like, the Survivor producers clearly wanted to ding Redemption Island and wanted to kill the Outcast twist. But I probably would have to agree with Martha, like, just maybe because the Outcast twist does have that one night stand, like, nostalgia to it, like, where we can look back on it now and it's like, oh, that was so great. But, like, at the time, it wasn't my favorite. But I think the fact that they didn't overdo it, like, that really helped. And so I would probably agree. I would probably ding that one and then kill Redemption Island because no, thank you. I don't want to see that anymore.
You could die a slow death.
Yeah. Like, I think we're all done. We're all done with that. Well, plus the interesting, like the fun thing about the Outcast twist also, and this was talked about on a podcast somewhere on RHAP, but wasn't it because the preachers essentially didn't want to hang out with like Lil anymore? So that was one of the reasons why they voted her back into the game. Does that sound right?
Technically a conspiracy, but definitely that's like common.
I feel like Paul told me that like right after I watched the seventh season or while I was watching it. And I mean, so for those of you who don't know, Paul, my husband, is one of the Survivor historians on that podcast. And so he really is kind of an expert on Survivor. So I feel like he used to really keep up on what was going on in the like with each season. So I feel like I kind of trust him on that. But maybe it was through the grapevine.
I think it's technically a conspiracy, but I'm pretty sure Johnny Fairplay talked about it.
No, I thought that somebody said that in an interview or something.
Like, it's revisionist history at this point. Like,
well, no, I mean back then.
I mean back then it's still revisionist history. It's not like it was right after it happened. Like, I'm sure that Nicole Delma would have wanted to come back. Like, and then she was like, well, actually, I just wanted Lil to not be on the pre-jury trip. So, I mean, I mean, it's a kind of convenient story for the people who didn't get voted back in my opinion.
Rob did say that he was going to ask Nicole, and I kind of want to know what she said.
Yeah,
so hopefully the first lady of podcasting can chime in.
That's okay. We're not a podcast known for facts, considering, the location of Chicago is still up for debate whether or not it's on the East or West Coast.
Oh, yes. That was a big controversy.
Yeah. Well, okay.
It's not
so
really on either coast. I think that's the point.
Right. Well, yeah, but that's what I was trying to. So we recorded late that night, and my brain pretty much shuts off past like 9 p.m. So there was like no hope for me. But yes, that's what essentially I was trying to get at. Anyway, that's besides the point.
We got it.
Okay.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right. Well, so let's get into our first activity of this podcast. We are going to sort the contestants or a subset of the contestants of the Edge of Extinction into the Harry Potter houses. So I have two experts here on Harry Potter fandom. So if the two of you could set up the premise of the Sorting Hat, that would be much appreciated.
Sure. So the Sorting Hat in Harry Potter is, for those who don't know, it's what sorts the students of Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry into four separate houses, which the students like spend most of their time with, have most of their classes with. And it's basically a personality test. When Alice and I were on Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast back in the fall, Rob and Akiva both took the Hogwarts Sorting Hat test from Pottermore. And Rob, I believe they both got Hufflepuff, actually. So
yeah.
Hufflepuff is the hard worker house. Ravenclaw is the intelligent and creative house. Gryffindor is the brave and noble house. And then Slytherin is the ambitious and cunning house.
Yes.
So see, people, this is just a personality quiz, very similar to the animal in you.
Trying not to make this too wizard heavy, but like it is a fun way to talk about this.
We're not going to spend too long talking Harry Potter, but like, I mean, I think that's kind of our thing. So we kind of have to do some Harry Potter. And it's interesting when you think about people. I think the Hogwarts Sorting Hat quiz is sort of like one of an interesting way that you can look at people's character types.
Exactly. And I am 100% here for any type of personality quiz. And so that's what we're going to do. We are going to determine these, personality types for some of the contestants. Not all of them, because all of them are still around and there's just far too many people. But we are going to kick things off by first sorting Kelly. So, Martha, what house did you put Kelly into?
Well, I'll first say Kelly is one of my very favorite players of all time. I know that's kind of not a hot take at this point, but she was my winner pick back in San Juan del Sur, and I felt very attached to her since then.
Yeah, she's kind of the Kelly's biggest stan.
No, I don't claim that title because there's a lot of Kelly stans out there. But I have to say, I feel like Kelly, when I was going through these sortings, I went through their original cast bios and looked at the three words they used to describe themselves. Kelly's were independent, expressive, and stubborn, which definitely I feel like are very accurate to who she is. I also think that her gameplay is known for being very private and sneaky. So I ended up putting her in Slytherin for those reasons, because I think that she has a very self-interested approach to the game that's very much a private, sneaky take.
Sneaky, sneaky.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I completely agree. I co-sign. And because of that, sneaky, sneaky. Perfect for Slytherin.
So I had originally put her in Gryffindor just because I was thinking like kind of how much she sticks to her convictions. And I felt like she is very brave in the moves that she'll make in the game. But you've won me over. I'll totally flip to Slytherin. I think she is a Slytherin as well.
So what do you guys think about the edit of Kelly being more of a villain this time? I know that that's something that was talked about from even episode one, and I don't think it's necessarily been the forefront, but I don't think that it's gone away. Do you guys think that she's been painted as a villain this season?
I mean, I think that she falls into that archetype pretty conveniently because like I said, she's such a like self-interested, cold, player. I think that she definitely, I mean, she's tweeted about like how she's not like a smiling, cheerful person on Survivor, especially. So I can see how that like fits for her. I mean, I don't see her as a villain myself, but I think that especially at the beginning of the season, she was more on top of the tribe. She wasn't as much of an underdog as she's been in previous seasons. So I mean, I just feel like it's sort of a natural edit for her. Whether or not that's actually her personality is another thing.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I think that it definitely started out the season, she felt more like a villain. Now that she is an underdog within the game, not necessarily on her tribe, but within the game, she is now definitely an underdog. And I feel like the tone on Kelly had shifted a little bit last night. Like, it was very, very happy when she won the challenge. And so I think that the edit is kind of changing based on her status in the game.
Yeah, I think that's interesting to think about of if someone is an underdog, how their edit may change. Because I think maybe if we look back at how Kelly is perceived in San Juan del Sur, you know, maybe it's different, or, you know, second chances because she's playing from this position of the underdog. Whereas here, at least for the first few episodes, it was a little bit more from the top. And so she comes off as maybe a little bit colder and a little less endearing because she's not playing from, you know, from the underdog position.
Yeah, and I think also she's just has more confidence this time too, which I think we see in every returning player. Like, I definitely think we saw it with Aubrey, that the confidence makes them maybe a little bit less endearing to the viewers because they don't have the like insecurities that they had on their first couple seasons. So, I mean, good for her that she's feeling confident, but maybe not great for her audience because people would rather see an underdog most of the time.
Okay, so let's move on to another returning player. Alice, where did you sort David Wright?
So David was pretty easy for me. I guess there's a couple different cases to be made, but I think he fits into Ravenclaw, being such a puzzle master and such a so strategy oriented. Ravenclaw being the house of intelligence, wit, creativity, that really values learning. I see that David has all of those characteristics, so I put him into Ravenclaw.
Yeah, I 100% agree. 100% agree. Yeah, he's definitely got the intelligence and creativity, and he's also got the neuroses of a Ravenclaw as well. So I definitely see him as a Ravenclaw.
Yeah, I think my first instinct was definitely Ravenclaw, and then I thought about it a little bit more, and I was like, no, like his, you know, my brand is loyalty. I go to rocks for my people. But then I realized, oh no, that's what he's trying to sell himself as, that he is this Hufflepuff, truly, you know, in his heart of hearts, maybe he is a Ravenclaw with the fact that he builds and practices his puzzles, you know, in his own home. Yeah.
So only a true nerd, aka yeah. Ravenclaw, does that.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think Ravenclaw is a good spot for him. Okay. So Joe. So Joe is interesting because initially I was like, oh, Gryffindor, done deal. Like, of course, you know, Joe, I feel like is someone who is I mean, he's Joey amazing, right? I mean, he has not gone to a tribal council, the pre-merge, on his two past seasons, which is absolutely crazy. But I was thinking he might be someone who could fall as a Hufflepuff because he does seem to value hard work. He's dedicated. He seems to be very patient. You know, especially we saw the segment this episode where he was, you know, he's like, I'm going to work hard to provide for my tribe. And I know that he's doing that as part of his strategy, but I also kind of feel like that's who he is. So I was a little torn between the two. So I'm curious to hear what the two of you think about this.
Yeah, I had a similar thought process with him. Gryffindor was definitely my gut instinct for him. He's definitely very adventurous, very, you know, just willing to like throw himself in into any kind of challenge. Definitely the athleticism isn't always a Gryffindor characteristic, but oftentimes is, and the competitiveness as well. But at the same time, like you said, he is very hardworking, very kind, kind of like a Cedric Diggory type. But in the end, I do think he is a Gryffindor.
Yeah, I totally see what both are like. I thought through both of those houses as well. And like you guys both, Gryffindor was my first instinct. And I think I still will stick with it just because I feel like he really does have that sort of like desire to like be noble and like do the right thing and stuff. And I think Hufflepuffs a lot of time are more driven by like what is just and what is fair and that. And for Joe, I think it's more of like the what is noble, like
and chivalrous
and chivalrous. Yeah. So that's where I see maybe the kind of like hairline difference coming down to that for him.
But Joe's doing it for Sierra. I don't know if you heard that during one of the challenges. I don't know who yelled it, but
I think it was Aurora.
Yeah. Okay. I think it was Aurora.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Joe quote that's been quoted a lot from us is how the first challenge in the very first episode, he's like, I freaking love you guys. Just like, okay, Joe.
Like, it was kind of condescending because it was like when they all got up on the platform to help him, like they finally got across and the other team didn't have anyone across yet. So he was like, I freaking love you guys. Like, wow, you guys did great too. Like, I'm not the only one over here.
It's like, okay, Joe.
Oh man, it's funny. Well, I think on Know It Alls they discussed this concept of like, oh well, maybe you should throw the challenge to get rid of Joe, but you can't throw the challenge when Joe is the challenge, you know? Right, what
exactly.
I mean,
yeah. Yeah, and I think with Joe, I think that like some of his Gryffindor qualities are what make it a little bit difficult for him to do really well at the strategic side of the game. It's kind of in some ways like I don't think that Harry would be that great at Survivor because he'd be like looking out for other people and like trying to help his teammates at all costs. Like,
Harry would never throw a challenge to make himself look weaker.
Right, exactly. So like that's where not that I think that Joe and Harry are like totally the same or anything, but I think some of those same qualities are in Joe, and I think that that's kind of what sometimes can impede his game a little bit.
That's a good point. All right, let's close out our returning players. Martha, where did you sort Aubrey?
I think Aubrey is definitely a Ravenclaw. I mean, she defines herself as being intuitive and like really in tune with people's like emotions and words too. I think that it's not necessarily totally a typical Ravenclaw in that I don't think that she's like super bookish, but I do definitely see her as a Luna type who definitely is quirky, but also very creative and very just endearing in terms of her quirkiness. So I think that Aubrey is a pretty clear Ravenclaw who has a tendency for being more on the quirky side.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I put her in Ravenclaw. I could definitely see a case for Hufflepuff just because I do think that sometimes like her emotional intelligence is the way that she would classify it. I think sometimes that can be a Hufflepuff trait as well, but I think that she's got both that and then like a, you know, really strong need for like an analytical side, or like where she's really analyzing the strategy of the game and really thinking about what other people are thinking and that kind of thing. So I see her as being very, like, she's very emotional, but she's also very analytical and very logical. So I see that as putting her into Ravenclaw over Hufflepuff.
Yeah. I mean, she was on the Brains tribe. Mm-hmm. Exactly. on her first season, so that was what, you know, first struck me. I definitely co-signed Ravenclaw.
Mic drop from Liana.
Boom.
She was on the Brains tribe.
You also dropped Mike from the podcast.
That's right. Dropping mics all over the place. Okay, so I want to talk about this person, Reem. Alice, where on earth did you put Reem?
Oh, Reem was one of the tough ones for me. Just because,
come on, dude.
Well, we've seen her really push to her limits. I mean, she is not doing well. So I don't know that we've really gotten to know Reem as far as like what she's truly like in her daily life. Like we've seen
her Reem daily life.
We've seen who she is on her, like in her, at her core. But that I don't necessarily believe that that is who she is. You know what I mean? Like there's a slight distinction there, but so we've seen her at her worst. Let's put it that way. But I do think like how fiery she is. That's kind of, I guess, what stood out to me the most. And then also just she is very motherly. So the character that she reminded me the most of in Harry Potter is Mrs. Weasley. And so I then, because of that, thought that she should be in Gryffindor, just because of that fiery hothead. That a lot of times is a trait that you see in Gryffindor.
Okay. Martha, what did you think?
Yeah, I ended up on Gryffindor for her as well, although I definitely, like I said, it's hard to like really know what she's like in her Reem daily life. So I have to say, like, if you look at the way she defined herself, inquisitive, tenacious, energetic, especially that tenacious, energetic side, I think definitely feels like a Gryffindor, like very jumping in and being very brave and not really having any qualms about doing anything. I feel like that falls into Gryffindor for her.
Yeah, I think those are all really good points. I mean, honestly, when I first was like, Reem, like, oh my God, I thought of, oh, okay, well, she values hard work because she's constantly moving people's stuff around. But it's like, true. No way. Okay, but she's, you know, she's not patient by any means.
No.
So no, like, I don't think Hufflepuff's the right fit. So yeah, I think Gryffindor is good for her.
And I can definitely see her sending a howl to Keith.
Yes. Yeah, no, she is kind of like, Sowl! Don't you think she's a lot like Mrs. Weasley? Like, just for how, like, I feel like that's how what Mrs. Weasley would do if she was out on the edge of extinction. She would, like, lose it.
And be, like, a mother to them at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, a mix. So, I mean, yeah.
So the mom thing is so funny because, like, I noted that in the very first episode where, you know, she was like, I'm not going to be out here and be a mom to you. And then, you know, everyone at the tribal council is like, she's like a mom. Even now on the edge of extinction, we have a continuation of this Reem being the mom storyline where Reem says it's good to have a mom on your tribe.
Yes. So, she's like totally leaning into it at this point.
And like Keith is like, you know, her son kind of.
Yeah,
and,
like nobody but a mom says that they're disappointed in you.
Yeah, that's so disappointing.
Dude. So good. Okay. I want to talk about Ron Clark. So we get to see a little bit more from him this episode. I put Ron Clark in Slytherin because up until this point, and then even what continued his whole plan to take out Joe, he seems to be someone who is very ambitious and super resourceful, you know, with him and Julia being willing to go through Joe's bag. So I thought that that would be a good fit for him.
Yeah, I totally agree. I put him in Slytherin as well. And kind of what, well, so going into the season, just his bio, he kind of seemed to be aware that he might come across as a villain. So I think that that in some ways already kind of had me thinking he was in Slytherin. But what really cemented it for me was this past week when he was talking about how he wanted to keep Joe around because he'd grown accustomed to being so comfortable around camp. Like he's using Joe to make himself a nicer camp life. And he's, you know, really self-interested in the sense that he doesn't want to struggle out there and he doesn't want to have to be the one doing the heavy lifting. So that then also put him into Slytherin for me.
Okay. Any other thoughts on Ron Clark?
I guess I sort of saw a little bit of a Gryffindor side. Like, I feel like he does have a bit of a hero complex in his like day-to-day life. Like being familiar with the Ron Clark Academy a little bit. I think like that's a little bit more of a, like, I'm doing what's right and I'm helping all these people kind of idea, which would be more a Gryffindor idea. But I definitely think he's playing a Slytherin game. So I'm definitely fine putting him into Slytherin.
Okay. So how about Victoria? Martha, do you think that she also belongs in Slytherin or somewhere else?
Yeah, I definitely think she's a Slytherin, and especially she cemented that status in this week's episode for sure. I mean, she's just controlling, ambitious. She definitely has wit to her as well. And I just think Slytherin's definitely right for her.
Yeah, sort of her end justifies the mean mentality like that. That puts her into Slytherin. And a lot of times people get kind of mad at me and Martha for like thinking that we're harsh on Slytherins. Like, this is an example of a Slytherin, like the Slytherin that you should want to be. Like, I'm like kind of obsessed with her now. Like, yes. She was awesome. And I love that she was such a Slytherin last episode. Like, that was so fun to watch. So, I think she's a Slytherin and like in a fun way to watch.
Yeah, I totally agree. She's such a badass. And she's like so tiny and looks so unassuming in her noticeable hat that like it's I'm really just excited to see where she goes in the rest of the game.
Totally. Yes.
Okay, let's talk about Rick Devins. So, Alice, where did you put Rick? I'm sorry, Devins.
Yeah, I mostly call him Rick, I think. But yeah, Devins, I guess, or Rick, I guess. It was a little tough for me. He's a little bit smarmy to me. Comes across, so that maybe was a little bit of a Gryffindor side. But I ended up putting him in Ravenclaw just because I do think he has that sort of like nerdy brain. And then also just like seeing him with the map last night, how good he was with figuring that out. That was kind of to me that pointed him towards Ravenclaw.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Because initially I was like, oh, he's probably a Hufflepuff, you know, because
too, yeah.
he was talking about being loyal to David. And that was sort of he seemed very patient also. And I think that those were part of his through line. I mean, obviously, we didn't get to hear, you know, a whole lot. I mean, it was mostly him, you know, oh, do we go against Kelly? You know, do I stick with David? And so I felt that loyalty to David really warranted him being in Hufflepuff.
I actually also have him in Hufflepuff. I think also in addition to the loyalty, he's got that hardworking side. I feel like he was one of the only ones on the Manu tribe who was like wanting to work all the time. And especially like, compared to Wardog. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of Rick, but I do think that Hufflepuff seems like the right place for him.
Well, speaking of the Wardog, so I put the Wardog in. Well, honestly, I didn't even know what to do. Like,
yeah, he's so random. It's hard.
So yes, weird. Exactly. And he seems like such an interesting person who has gone through so many different transformations on this season. Like, yes. First, it was like, oh, yeah, he's this really cunning strategist who, you know, knows the lay of the land and knows when to make a move, when not to make a move. And then he's turned into this like crazy human who is terrible at the challenges, apparently.
Terrible.
Who can't throw at all.
He cannot throw overhand at all. Like, that is his downfall.
That was so painful watching him try to throw.
But I think the fact that he was so stubborn, like he really wanted to re-enter the challenge, even though he had totally sucked it up the first time, like that's what made me put him in Gryffindor. And that might be kind of a weird take, and I can easily be persuaded to something else because I wasn't totally set on that. But I think just his like confidence in himself, and then just how hot-headed he can be, that's what put him in Gryffindor for me.
Yeah, I
could see that. I feel like his main issue is that he's got these horrible trust issues where he just like is so paranoid and like moving every piece all at once, like every possible outcome is in his head. That seemed more like either a Slytherin or Ravenclaw to me. And I feel like his like archetype is typically a Slytherin. So I'm not sure either. But I was thinking more like Slytherin for him.
So I was thinking more like Slytherin for him as well. I mean, something that I wrote down was whatever the Wardog wants, the Wardog gets. But I almost feel like that quote could also be applied to Gryffindor as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes. So, you know, to be honest, I don't know. Although since my gut feeling was Slytherin, I have a feeling like that's where I would probably land.
And with his like blocking spree on Twitter, I feel like that's kind of a Slytherin, like, well, oh, you don't like the Wardog? Well, the Wardog wasn't like you.
He definitely does have the like sort of self-interested gameplay, at least. I don't know. And this is on Twitter, too. So maybe also life, like lifestyle. But so I would be fine with putting him in Slytherin because like, I guess he's been compared to Tony a lot. And Tony, would be a Slytherin.
Yeah.
So I think. Yeah, I just feel like he's a little bit more random, little bit harder to predict.
Like,
so
he's kind of endearing how like goofy he can be. Like in the first couple episodes, I was always like, he's so cute.
He like, is adorable, like in his own weird way. Yes. Like he has this like glint in his eye at all the time. And it's so funny and cute. But it's also like, who are you?
It's so weird to think of him as cute, too. But it's like, it is.
I love him. He's adorable.
Well, it's not so much like a bull in a china shop. It's what's like a cute little like like I don't know, like a meerkat like in a China shop, like
a war puppy.
Yeah, exactly. Something that is going to go like crazy and still destroy everything, but is like still somehow maybe endearing. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, like a like niffler.
A niffler, exactly. Like or like a wolverine or something. I'm trying to think like what would be the equivalent, but just like some little
raccoon
animal that you just like let loose and then it just like thrashes the whole store or like
yeah. He is adorable, like well does it
yeah well, he is, he's really funny and like a puppy, he's like a war puppy, I guess.
Yeah, well I could see, you know, some people have varying opinions on Ron Clark, some people, you know, think he's really entertaining, sometimes he comes off as a little smarmy, like I think I've definitely seen both. I think Wardog is someone who's similar, where it's like, well, like what the hell, Wardog, like you're super annoyed with him, but then the same, you know, you can also on the flip side can have like be like, who is this crazy man and who let him on Survivor?
Yeah, and I feel like that's exactly how Kelly feels about him too, like as her ally, where she's like, who is he? But like, I mean, I'll work with him.
Yeah, I think she like really likes him most of the time, but then other times she's getting frustrated with him, and it's just kind of like, now why do you keep doing that? And like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
yeah, he's funny.
Yeah, specialist for sure. Yes. Okay, so let's talk about Julie. So Martha, you said that you love Julie. Explain, and also where did you put Julie?
Okay, well, Julie, and actually you were talking about this, I can't remember if it was last week or the week before on the B&B, but I feel like Julie has had like a pretty good edit, surprisingly, where she hasn't actually been that like pivotal of a person in the season, but she's had a lot of confessionals. I just think she's really entertaining and really like witty in the way that she talks. I really, really like her. And I think that she could do really well in the game. I think she's a Ravenclaw because I think she has a really good way with her words. She's definitely neurotic. Haven't seen that so much yet, but I think that like in her original like preseason stuff, she comes across as having a lot of neuroses and being pretty like in her head about stuff. So I definitely think she's a Ravenclaw.
She reminds me a lot of Denise Stapley. And I think that like I'm not necessarily that Denise is a Ravenclaw. I feel like Denise might be a Gryffindor, but I think that like she's very smart the way that Denise was, and very like makes very keen observations about people. Mm-hmm. That's definitely the sense I've gotten from her. And then I feel like if your job is to sell wooden toys, like that's like unique enough and quirky enough that's a big push towards Ravenclaw as well. So I think I would definitely agree with you on that, Martha.
Yeah, I also agree with that. And she's somebody who I'm excited to see now that we're going to be coming into the merge, and to see whether or not she gets similar levels of attention. I mean, or hopefully more attention if, you know, she's actually like there to vote instead of
finally
being on the Joe tribe. So, okay. So let's two more people to cover. Let's talk about Lauren. Alice, where did you sort Lauren?
Lauren was a little tough. I think she's really grown on me, kind of the way that
Victoria.
Yeah, kind of the way that Victoria grew on me this week. I started to really like respect Lauren. I know she's struggling out there and having a hard time, but like she's pushing through. It's not like she's talking about quitting or anything. So I really, it was kind of tough for me to sort her, because I think we've seen her at a weak point, kind of like with Reem. It's kind of tough to sort someone when they're kind of at a low point. But I see her as very loyal. She seems like a great ally for Kelly. And so I ended up putting her into Hufflepuff. However, I could be persuaded for other houses as well.
Yeah, Martha, what did you think?
I was kind of waffling between Hufflepuff and Gryffindor. As a like college athlete, I think she's definitely very competitive and very like she's got that like Gryffindor competitive side. So I ended up putting her in Gryffindor, especially like with her like her gameplay so far hasn't been like totally crazy yet, but like her finding an idol, and it was a pretty like ballsy move not to play the idol this week at the double tribal. So I feel like that was a pretty brave Gryffindor move to keep the idol and like count on her, like count on the plan that they were working on, to stick to the plan. And I think that she kind of played, I feel like she likes to gamble, and that feels like a Gryffindor kind of move.
So I had a really hard time with Lauren, because it all came back for me somehow to her idol find. And it was like, oh, well, it's a really intelligent move to not tell Kelly about the idol. Oh, it's, you know, she must be super dedicated to like go out there and keep looking and keep trying to find that idol. It also took a lot of daring and nerve to go out there and find that idol. I was like, well, this is not helpful. I ended up putting her in Gryffindor because of that. And she's somebody who, even though she seems to be starving and sick is still kicking butt in a lot of the challenges. So good for her for bringing it there, even though she's really struggling.
I agree. Now that you guys bring that stuff up, I think Gryffindor is a good fit for her. I think she might be one of those characters where, like, we see inklings of Gryffindor in her now, but the more that the game goes on, we might see more of that in her.
All right. So finally, we got to talk about Big Wendy.
Yeah.
I had her in Gryffindor because she is blindly brave. And that was like my main reason. I wrote blindly brave, kind of a dumbass. And that I decided put her in Gryffindor.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. I actually put her into Ravenclaw just because I felt like she was so quirky and unique. And I just thought that she reminded me a lot of Luna Lovegood. And I know Martha compared
Aubrey
to Luna earlier, which is also a good comparison. But I felt like that Wendy, like, was that quirky side of Ravenclaw, not necessarily the like bookish side, but the side of like wanting to really embrace who you are and show your uniqueness in its totality. So that's why I put her into Ravenclaw. But I can see the Gryffindor side as well, for sure.
Yeah, I was choosing between those two as well, and I ended up on the Ravenclaw side just again because, like, she is that creative, witty type. I mean, maybe not witty, but quirky type. So I mean, I think I'm still sticking with Ravenclaw, but I definitely see the Gryffindor side where she's got this very, like, big personality and not afraid to, like, own the room.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You know what? I think I can see those points. I think that's somewhere where she could definitely fall. Plus, isn't her hair blue? So, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Perfect.
Woo. All right. I know we covered a lot of people, but I think that was a lot of fun. And I think it's interesting also to revisit, you know, now, especially the returning players, and talk about them and sort of where we think people are going to be and how they've performed so far in the season.
Yeah, I really do like the Hogwarts style for as far as like getting to the core of what people's values are. So I think it's pretty fun to examine people from that lens.
Okay, so Martha, what discussion question would you like to talk about today?
All right, well, we've talked a lot about Extinction Island. So, of course, my question has to do with Extinction Island. And also it has to do with the Outcast twist a little bit. I was thinking about how there's six people on Extinction Island right now, and they're all very unique, goofy personalities. And I did see somebody making the comparison of Reem and Keith to Lil and Skinny Ryan. And so I was wondering if we could try to compare the six people left on Extinction Island right now to the six members of the Outcast tribe, and figure out if there's a one-to-one comparison for each of these six crazy people.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so let's reset. Let's go through each of the members of the Outcast tribes, just to sort of have a little bit of a refresher for maybe those who aren't familiar. So I'm going to list someone from the tribe, and then if the two of you can give, you know, what you defining characteristics, similar to the Four Houses of Hogwarts, what are some defining characteristics of that person, and then we'll try and find a match for them. So Perfect. Let's talk about Burton first. So what are some defining characteristics of Burton, and who do you think would really be his analog?
Well, okay, Burton, I think, is the easiest one to compare to somebody on Extinction Island, because we have Chris Underwood. And I mean, I think that the two of them are a very similar archetype. Burton's this surfer bro who's like very much a like macho, very competitive, athletic, not necessarily the most strategic person, but definitely has a big head. It feels a bit like a very one-to-one comparison, him to Chris Underwood.
Yeah, I agree definitely with that. I think Burton and Chris both have going for them the fact that they, like, in any random simulation of Survivor, like, they're going to do pretty well. I guess Chris was, they were anomalies on their seasons. I feel like it was kind of like, oh, wow, that was a surprise that they got out, because they are kind of that, like, golden boy type, like, archetype, I guess. So I think I would agree with Martha on that one.
Yeah, I think that one's a pretty straight call. Like, I'm just thinking about who else Burton could be. And Chris is really, I think, the only person who, like, truly fits the bill. Okay. All right. Well, let's just talk about Lil, because I think this might also be a little bit of a clear comparison. But actually, given some of the people on the island, it might not be so clear. So what do you guys think for Lil?
I do have to agree with like the comparisons that have been made to Reem, just because she's in that mother role and kind of emotionally unstable. Maybe
in a different way, but still
And then also like just how I do think she's one of the more disliked figures on Extinction Island. So I think that. Like, if the rumors are true about how Lil re-entered the game, then I do think I can see a parallel there with Reem as well.
Okay, so then who is Wendy?
That's probably the hardest one. I mean, I think it's probably either Nicole or Michelle. Nicole, I feel like Nicole is so, like, and no offense to the flop, obviously, but I feel like Nicole is a little bit bland, so I don't know if we could say that she is... Wendy, Michelle is a little bit quirkier, so maybe we could say that.
I was going to say Michelle.
Yeah.
But then who's Aubrey? That's kind of the problem.
Skinny Ryan, of course. No.
Oh, duh.
Because the two people, I was like, okay, Lil is either Reem or Wendy. And it's like, no, it has to be Reem. So then I think Michelle by default has to be Wendy, right?
Yeah. And then Nicole is Aubrey. And then Trish is Rick. This is where it starts to fall apart.
Yeah, I mean, Skinny Ryan is Keith. I think,
right.
In this situation.
Yeah, no, Skinny Ryan's definitely key.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, okay, Aubrey actually I could see being more like Trish because Trish was sort of the, like, calm, like, sweet person. I mean,
and sort of, like, she seemed like she was kind of analytical.
Yeah, and, like, more stable mentally, too, like Aubrey is. So I could see maybe Aubrey being Trish.
The only thing I could ever remember about Trish is how that woman in the shop wanted to like buy her eyes. I can't even remember that whole story now, but that's like the main thing I remember about Trish.
And Aubrey's super endearing that way too, so I could see that.
Has anyone ever wanted to buy her eyes? That we don't know. Maybe we'll find out.
Probably. I mean, I think people have asked her for feet pictures. I've seen stuff about that.
Whoa! So,
kind of similar.
So, yeah, maybe not too far off.
Yeah. So then Nicole is Rick?
Obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense. Like, those two are both ones where I feel like Rick got a lot of hype as far as people thinking he was going to go far into the game and thinking that they saw a lot of potential in him. And that he ultimately came up short. And I feel like that's kind of how people were with Nicole. Like, she was a very super normal first boot, where it was kind of like a weird moment that she left. So maybe that.
Yeah, and Rick also wore a dress.
Yeah, well, because didn't she only, like, she was...
Yeah, Rick also didn't have a bra on.
Right, yeah, she didn't have a bra on. It was only that blue dress, right?
Yeah, yeah,
so Rick also...
That was...
Yeah. Also started the season, no bra, only a blue dress, which we all remember, I'm sure.
Yeah, this is a very memorable Rick moment. Uh-huh. But, I mean, I think Rickle, it works. Rick, Nicole, Rickle. Uh-huh.
Rickle,
their couple name.
That's kind of where it starts to fall apart.
Yeah.
But I did think that most of those kind of were fun comparisons.
Well, it was a bit of a reach, but
I think you have to. Well, you know, in the going back to the ding, marry, kill of it all, you know, maybe when the Edge of Extinction wants to do a little, you know, dress up, then maybe we bring in the Outcast twist and dress up a little for us.
Right. Keith's going to have a die jerks buff.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my goodness. OK, well, let's get into a game that I would like to play. So this I couldn't help but notice there were so many food quotes. And I know that they're on Survivor. They're starving. Of course, they're going to talk a lot about food. But for some reason, these two episodes in particular had a lot of people talking about food. So, of course, I wanted to make the game show Supermarket Sweep, where you run around the grocery store and throw food into your cart into a game for a podcast. But that clearly was not going to work. So we're going to have to settle for this instead. We're going to play a food quote game where you're going to have to guess who said a particular quote about food. So we're going to actually play this Twitch style this week in Survivor history, where you will have an option to guess the person outright. But if you guess incorrectly, the other person has a chance to steal that point. Or you can ask for the multiple choice, where I will give you four answers, one of which is the correct answer.
Now, are you good at counting points, Liana? Because I'm a little concerned about this being a Twitch-style game.
That's right. Yes. Well, thankfully, with the Twitch-style game does not come the Twitch-style math.
Oh, okay, good.
But, you know, you never know. Like, you know, there's the joke about engineers that, like, they're actually not very good at math. And, you know, I'm an engineer, so we'll see how this goes.
Great.
So just to clarify, with the what point can we go to the multiple choice?
So you'll get 2 points if you guess it outright and 1 point for the multiple choice. Yeah. So I'll read the quote, give you an opportunity to answer. If you like the multiple choice, you can still get 1 point if you get it correctly. And then if, you know, you get the multiple choice, then the other person will not get the opportunity to steal.
Okay. Sounds good.
Which now I understand, Jordan having to explain the rules of Twitch. Like, yeah, okay, it is kind of complicated.
Oh, don't give him too easy of a pass.
Love you, Jordan. Okay, so let's get things going. Alice, this first quote is for you. Who said, OMG, peanut butter and jelly, peanut butter and jelly, peanut butter and jelly?
Okay, I am going to risk it here and guess outright. Was it Aurora?
Oh, no, it was not.
Dang it.
Shoot. Oh, okay, because actually we were just watching the episode and we were making fun of her when she was like, peanut butter jelly, peanut butter jelly.
It was before. I don't think she said the OMG part. Yeah, that's what screwed me.
Okay.
So I get to steal.
Martha,
now.
Yes, you have the opportunity to steal.
Okay. Was it Aubrey?
No, that's incorrect. It was actually Wentworth.
Oh, dang it. Okay, I never would have gotten that.
Yeah. Okay, well, so knock you a little. Okay. Martha, this next quote is for you. Okay. Who said peanut butter, peanut butter, peanut butter, peanut butter?
Oh, I think it was Aurora.
Boo, that was cheap.
Yeah. Well, I didn't realize that you guys would recognize the one super subtle quote and not the other super subtle quote about peanut butter, peanut butter, peanut butter, peanut butter.
Peanut butter, peanut butter.
Well, we were kind of making fun of Aurora because she was kind of being weird about it.
Well, and actually we were watching it and I was like, okay, we have to go back because I don't know what she just said. And then it was like, okay, she really just said peanut butter, peanut butter, peanut butter.
If only I would have been second in this game.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there was something about the cadence too, the way she said it. Peanut butter, peanut butter, peanut butter, peanut butter.
I know, it was like she was like drumming or something with her, like her beatboxing.
It was not my favorite Aurora moment so far.
What is your favorite Aurora moment?
Yeah, good
when
point.
She was like licking her paw or whatever that was last week.
She was a cat, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, all right, Alice. Hopefully this
I
one.
I redeem myself.
Yes, exactly. You can recognize. So, who said, this crappy-ass beach that has no food?
Was that Lauren?
Yes, that is correct.
Yes. So I remembered the crappy-ass quote.
Yes, that was the best.
That was, Lauren about losing the reward.
Okay, I'm back in this.
Okay. Martha, who said, hey, I think I found a clam?
David.
Yes, that is correct. That
funny story about that. We were watching last night with Paul's mom, and she's kind of known for maybe not necessarily paying the closest attention while we're watching. And so David said that, and she's like not watching at all. She was like on her phone and like totally zoned out. And she goes, great, one clam for 12 people. That's going to do a lot of good.
Like there's four people on their tribe.
We're like, first of all, it was a huge clam. And second of all, it's to feed four people, not 12. Like,
It was.
She said it's so sassy. It was hilarious.
It was a big clam. Yeah, I don't know if that's a euphemism, but like, yeah, it was a rollback.
Doesn't Abby Maria find a big clam on some season? I feel like that's an Abby Maria quote.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. You're kind of spoiling this week's Twitch, Martha.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That happened this week in Survivor History. Okay, so our next quote, Alice, this is for you. Who said PB&J powers activate? Sorry for the other peanut butter question.
Okay, I remember it, but now I'm having trouble. Hold on. I have to take a second. Oh, it was Aubrey.
Yeah.
Dang it. I was going to steal.
Yes, I got it.
She's like, oh.
Yeah, that was a moment where I was like, okay, Aubrey.
Yeah, I don't know what that looks like.
The peanut butter and jelly
Yeah, I think the peanut butter and jelly brought out some weird sides of people.
For real. There were a lot of quotes. That's like, you know, almost half of my quotes were all from the peanut butter and jelly scene.
Peanut butter.
I think it like activated, like not the powers activated that Aubrey wanted, but like more of like that reverting back to a childlike state of like back when I ate PB&J in my school lunch every day.
Yeah, or I was thinking like the worst version of like the Power Rangers or Voltron or something. Like you have peanut butter and jelly and bread. Come together. Powers activate. That's the new animated show, I'm sure, on Cartoon Network, if that still exists.
It's going to be a hit. Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Martha, this next quote is for you. This is tasty. This spoon is like half broken, but it's my own little left-handed spoon.
Okay, I know this one. It was Chris Underwood.
Yes, that's correct. From the Edge of Extinction.
And it's I remembered that quote because it's while Keith is like running away. So you just see like Chris just like, chilling with his like left-handed spoon, and then you see Keith in the background like, I gotta go.
That was the best scene. I loved it so much.
Yes.
It was
so funny. This is why we voted him out. It's still, I think, one of my favorite quotes in a very long time.
I think my favorite, dang sure not Rick.
Dang sure not for Rick.
Yeah, it's so passionately
for
said.
Family. Not cool. Not cool.
Okay. Oh, and then the other thing, so just with the Edge of Extinction, when Chris gets the sticks to practice, and it literally says on the piece of parchment, you know, be sure to practice or something like that. And in the confessional, he's like, I think this is something I need to practice.
Yeah, I was like, oh, you're smart.
Yeah, we made fun of that as well. It was like, I think this will be something I need to practice. And Martha, I was like, now what exactly led him to believe that it would have to do with practice?
He is almost as smart as Heidi. He knew immediately.
He knew instantly.
Yeah. He is so smart. Okay, all right. We got two more quotes to go. Alice, who said cheeseburger and showers?
Ooh, that was Wendy.
Yes, that is correct. That was Big Wendy. Which, by the way, is she not a vegetarian now? Or
she's been a Boca Burger.
She's been a vegetarian for 10 days now, Liana.
She meant a Boca Burger, Liana. Come on.
That's right. Yeah, I wasn't sure about that, but okay, Wendy.
And she's not vegan. She's just a non-chicken eater.
Right. Yeah, so the cheese part was fine.
Right.
Maybe that's what she was going for. She was going to get a cheeseburger without the patty, I'm sure.
Yeah, like a bun with a piece of cheese.
That's like that's a burger made of cheese.
Okay. That sounds awful. We have one more quote, Martha. So right now it's tied. If you get this correct, you will win the game.
Ooh.
Okay. Mm. Who said, comma, cult Kool-Aid?
Okay. I think that was Aubrey.
Yes, that is correct. That was Aubrey.
Now, but which flavor of Kool-Aid is your favorite?
So, well, I like the grape one the best. That's what Aubrey made, or Joe made. We were all drinking that. It was really good.
Yeah, he made that a lot, and we loved it. Yeah,
thanks, Raven.
Oh, my God. That's a good quote. Okay. All right. Well, congratulations, Martha. Although it was a very close game. Honestly am actually super impressed with both of you. The fact that you remembered the majority of those quotes without having to get the multiple choice, like, that's amazing.
Thank you. I will say this, both Martha and I are obsessed with food. Like, so I think those quotes stood out to us naturally. It was a game that was made for us. I spend like half my day at work talking about food with my coworker and I'm not even on Survivor.
And the other half just thinking about food.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, like-minded individuals, there's a reason why those quotes stood out to me to put a game together about food.
Exactly.
So yeah, I'm here for this. Okay. Time to talk about the Ron Clark rule. So we are putting together our very own Ron Clark rule book about the game of Survivor and how to play the game of Survivor. So far, we have compiled four different rules. And tonight we are actually today, we're whenever you're listening to this again. Sorry, we're like recording. It's fine. Whatever. Okay, so we have added four rules and they are rule number 56, Ream Daily. Rule number 57, speak softly and carry a big snake. Rule number 58, don't be stupid, watch your back. And rule number 59, always go through someone's bag 20 minutes ago. So it is up to us to add two more rules to the Ron Clark rule book. So do either of you have any suggestions? Otherwise, I've got a few that I think might work.
Well, okay, I do get a little bit confused with this, whether it needs to be something that's Ron Clark specific related or whether it should be just going with the whole episode in general.
Yeah, not necessarily. It can be going with the episode in general. It's something that we learned from this episode or episodes of Survivor that are things to remember.
Okay, well, I was kind of like playing with some like fun like teacher inspiration quotes that like I feel like a lot of teachers have on their walls. And my favorite one that one of my teachers in middle school had was shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll land among the stars. And I was thinking about how Ron, like he hasn't been to tribal this whole pre-merge. So I was thinking that we could do like shoot for the moon and don't miss because he hasn't missed this whole time. So I could see it being something like taking that inspirational quote and then making it a lot more like, yeah, but you actually can't miss.
It needs to showing how he's kind of had an easy ride.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it needs to be something or like, I don't know, saying something like shoot for the target and don't, or like, shoot for the moon and don't hit someone else's moon.
yeah, well, that would be like a Steven Fishback rule. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. All right. I like that one. I think if we could make it shoot for the moon and don't miss, it's almost like have Joey Amazing shoot for the moon.
Yeah. Well, that was the other one I was thinking of is don't ever sit out a challenge unless Joe is on your team, because Ron did sit out one of the challenges this episode. So it was like, don't ever sit out unless Joe's on your team. So we could combine those two, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, actually, one of the ones I was thinking of was just have Joey Amazing on your tribe.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I was trying to come up with, something like that.
Yeah, okay. I think we have to add one of the Joey Amazing ones, just because, I mean, my God. They came in first, isn't it? Like, didn't they win, like, all but one challenge? Like, one reward challenge?
Mm. Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
That is really insane.
All right. So I think we just add have Joey Amazing on your tribe.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's
yeah.
Fair.
That kind of covers it.
Yes.
The other one that I was kind of thinking, well, this probably isn't going to be very good for a rule, but like I was kind of struck by, this isn't Ron Clark related either, but I was kind of struck by Victoria's quote about like how people really should not trust her just because like she has no feelings in the game. And she said that in the second episode, but it was also kind of true of the first episode. So that's where I was kind of thinking something about not trusting Victoria, but I don't know if that's a little too narrow and maybe we don't know enough yet at this point in the game.
What exactly was the quote again? Something about not having feelings?
She said something like never trust me because she was saying like that she would not actually be willing to go to rocks for her tribe.
Yeah, and she was like, I don't feel bad about it,
and she was like, don't trust me,
something about like don't trust me or don't feel bad about it. Right.
Yeah. Like always be apathetic.
Always be apathetic. No. Or was something, yeah, maybe, but something about her, like her, you know, what she did with Aubrey and that whole like vote out, or like her something mm-hmm. about the stone cold badassery that is Victoria.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was leaning. But Liana, if you have other ideas, like we can definitely do one of those instead.
Yeah, the Victoria one is good though. So my other rule that I was thinking about was all's fair in love and war, dog.
Oh, I like that. I love that. It actually, because that's so like,
although I don't really like image of in war dog.
Ew. No, I think it's good though, because like it kind of shows what a wild card he is. Like he's up for anything.
Right. And it kind of felt like we saw this of him, you know, where I know that he didn't go to the first tribal council, but it was like, oh my gosh, he's gonna be targeting Lauren and he's a crazy person. And then they have the whole discussion mm-hmm. about what he's gonna do and or what they're gonna do, and he just overrides people. It seems like this guy will, you know, like the China, you know, the animal in the China shop, whatever he was supposed to be, the war dog in a China shop, I suppose. just yeah, causing complete chaos. So all's fair in love and war dog, I think would be a fun rule. Okay.
I was sorry, we have like a plane going over us right now. It's really loud, so I don't know if you can hear
no.
that. Okay, good.
Okay.
Okay. I was gonna say I love the David Wright quote where he was like, that's what war dogs do.
Yes.
He's waging war. That's what war dogs do.
I guess that's what war dogs do. Oh, also can we just talk really quick about how much David wanted to go fishing and how much War Dog did not want to go fishing with him?
Oh my god.
That was my favorite.
Okay, one, I love that quote, or the impression, by the way, of David Wright. That's so good. Yeah. But yeah, oh my gosh. And he's the only one who seems to be sort of trying to maybe get food.
He's like, what about just if you and I went out and we took the spear, we just tried to catch something.
And I was like, no, I don't want to.
Yeah, but what about just like clams, you know? We just got there walking.
And then he's like, we need all the energy we could get for the challenge.
I'm honestly too tired.
No energy.
So one of the quotes I had for a potential tiebreaker was Wardog saying, the idea of fishing, it's counterintuitive. We need to save our energy, calories and energy for the challenges. Which, like, I get, though.
But the counterintuitive part was when he was like, I've only had a little bit of rice. I'm like, well, yeah, that's why you need fish.
it's frustrating, though, because, honestly, I can see where he's coming from. Like, let's say you burn 500 calories out there to catch a fish that only is 100 calories. But at the same time, I feel like Kelly Wentworth, when she was like, oh, yeah, I guess he's right for wanting to put the target on Wendy. Because, of course, the other three on the Manu tribe, the original Manu tribe, aren't going to want to go to rocks. But still, like, the way he's going about it. You're just like, meh. Screw you, Wardog.
Yeah. Well, one clam for 12 people. What's not even going to do it?
No calories.
Great. One clam for 12 people. Great.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So we have added to the rule book. Rule number 60, have Joey Amazing on your tribe. And rule number 61, all's fair in love and war, dog.
I love it.
Okay. I love it, too. Now let's begin to wrap things up by talking about the previous answers to our question of the week. So we asked last week, what animal would be the best to make an alliance with? So here's what you had to say. Brendan Fitzpatrick wrote in and said, my real answer is a weasel that I will name Woo and further confuse the mystery behind Weasel Woo. So this is maybe another conspiracy theory. I don't know if the two of you know this, but didn't he like sneak into a production tent or something?
I was never clear on what exactly happened with Weasel Woo, but that was like that. It was something like so despicable.
But they like claimed he did that, but then he said he didn't. It was kind of like a Kel situation.
Right.
But.
So, yeah, Brendan, you're not helping the situation by
making it more confounding.
Yeah. But if the weasel is Weasel Woo, then that is a pretty good alliance to make, actually.
Yeah. Actually, weasel is the animal that Alice first got when she took the animal in you quiz.
Oh, good to know.
Was it the first? No, the first one I got was a bear.
Oh, I thought weasel was...
Okay. Weasel was the second. I took it like 80 times, so yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of animals, Grace Leader wrote in and said, so the animal I would choose is a bear, simply because he won this animal Brant Steel, which then linked a Brant Steel of animals. Wow. Yes, which was a mock-up of Survivor Philippines. I'm actually surprised this is not one of Mike Bloom's mini podcasts.
Yeah.
But yeah, so if anyone's interested, I have the link for that. You can see how that plays out. Although, spoiler alert, the bear from the Tan Dang tribe won this season.
Oh, silly old bear.
Oh, cute. That just goes to show there's a Brant Steel for everything.
Yes. So true. Okay. Jonathan Troyer wrote in and said, I would bring a pig with me on Survivor because it could root around for the idol, its strength could help out in challenges, and if someone tells it their secret plan to vote me out, it'll squeal. Or we could eat it.
Oh, that took a dark turn.
Not going for that sea of money, I see.
No,
definitely not. That, the other reasons were pretty good, though, I think. I like how he would squeal.
Yeah, I had the pig, too, because it's like, my first thought was, I was like, okay, I want something that would find an idol. What can find things? And instead of, you know, I don't know, like hunting dogs or things that are potentially useful, the first thing, food-related, that popped into my head was a truffle sniffing pig, whatever. So, yeah, I can totally see that. All right. Parker Schimler said, I would bring along a scorpion. That way, any real competition could mysteriously be medevaced. Also, he would be wearing one of those propeller hats, which I very much appreciated, the tiny hat.
Oh, cute.
That sounds very cute.
I'm just apt to go with anything that's adorable. Yes. So.
I know, me too.
So cute. But can you imagine when your allies betray you because they just want to keep the adorable scorpion with the propeller hat in the game?
Maybe that's why scorpion's a good choice, because it's like, it's cute with the hat, but then you take the hat off, it's not so cute anymore. So,
yeah.
The noticeable hat is not as noticeable for a scorpion.
Okay. Christmas wrote in and said, I think a wolf would be a good ally on Survivor as they are loyal to a pack, which means they'd be loyal to me. So that one is, I think, really good. Plus, it could hunt for those chickens that are running around the confessionals.
Yeah, the ghosts on the jungle in Fiji, as Aubrey called them.
There are a lot of ghosts. There I was like, okay, ghosts. Aubrey.
We're like chickens.
I love Aubrey, but that was a little bit forced.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So speaking about forced, I loved David Wright's confessional. This tribe is so on the edge of extinction.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, David.
I know. I'm like, David, that's not what
like,
it means.
He's like, what was it? Scientists are worried or something. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it was said.
Yeah. He clearly like thought that he had like figured out the meaning of the season. No, not quite.
I mean,
nice
that's
try.
Why he's such a good narrator and he keeps coming back, because just like I feel like Zeke has the same ability to do this, where they just sneak in those little tidbits for production. They're like, oh,
yeah. Oh, production loves it. Yes.
They were like, oh, perfect. Let's just immediately clip that so that we can just stick it into an episode whenever we want.
In the promo, yeah. For sure. All right. Yes. So finally, Edmo, I got to read this one. He said, I'm just going to say it, a big old cock. Thanks,
oh, okay.
Edmo.
Thanks, Edmo.
Very Edmo like.
Wow. That I don't know
very
what I expected,
brand.
But that was not on my mind. So good job.
Yeah. And maybe an Underwood, if you will. Okay.
Or David, though. Like, okay, did you notice the bulge this week on David?
No, I did not.
That was, oh my gosh, so many times. So, like, it doesn't help that his, like, actual legs are really, really skinny. So, like,
his boxers are really, like, getting really loose. So
you can see a lot.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't want to see a lot, maybe don't go back and watch the episode, because now you're going to see a lot. Like, I think I pointed it, like, noticed it last night, and we were talking about it, and we were saying like that would have been blurred in the past. Like, yeah. I am surprised that wasn't blurred.
This is what we really need a segment at the end of the B&B. It's sort of like the, you know, summary of what we've learned today.
Right.
And so I think like talking about the outcast conspiracy, the fact that, you know, Keith and Skinny Ryan are exactly the same person, and David's bulge should have been blurred. Like, add that to the list.
It's weird. Cause like, Chris's was like so his boxers were so tight, and that was why you could see it so much, but David's were so loose, and
yeah, they were like falling off. Yeah. But then it was just like so revealing, like you could see everything.
Very counterintuitive. Okay, yes. Well, let's get into the answers that we had for the question of the week. So Martha, what animal is the best animal to make an alliance with?
Well, I did struggle with this question a little bit, but I was looking up predators of snakes, because I feel like we have the snake eating the rat, but we want something that's going to eat the snake. So I was kind of deciding between a honey badger and a mongoose for that reason.
They're good. I like those.
Mongoose eats the snake.
Yes.
Yeah. I was concerned a little bit with the animal, whether or not it could vote. Because I was like, okay, well, if I pick a snake, or, you know, whatever animal, is like, but it needs to be able to write. Or could it just sort of, like, stamp
right. Does
like with its little paw.
It's like in Richard Scarry, like the little like inchworm that has the lowly worm. Yeah. It holds the pencil like in its tail. So
something like that. Okay. Yeah. Alice,
so,
what did you think?
So are you going with a mongoose or a?
I'm going to go with honey badger.
Honey badger.
I don't want to have that against you. So
yeah,
you want that on your side.
Yeah. Well, okay. For anyone who knows me, this is going to come as very obvious, but I would pick a cat. Just because, first of all, I love cats. I'm a crazy cat lady. So I would want to hang out with a cat for the whole season. I feel like cats and I can communicate. So I would understand what the cat was telling me to do. And then second of all, cats are unfortunately kind of disliked by a lot of people. So I would probably make a really good person to sit next to in the final two, because you know, I don't know that everybody would be voting for the cat, even though if I was in the jury, I would certainly be voting for the cat.
So have you found the black cat to your witch, Alice?
I think I have found the black cat to my witch, and that is just a cat.
Yeah, also talk about forced lines a little bit.
Yeah, I was like, that's
on
kind
Halloween
of a reach.
Night.
Okay, Aubrey. Okay, so I actually said a parrot. And the reason I said a parrot was, one, because I felt like they would let it vote if it could, like, tip-tap its little beak or something. And then that's how it could vote. But more importantly, if it could listen in the trees to various conversations and then report back to me what was being said, that could be super, super beneficial. Essentially, like, an upgrade to the spy shack. So...
That's actually
I really
that's
like
smart,
that,
yeah. Liana. I'm impressed. Like
that seems like the plot on like a sitcom where the parrot is like being used to like be a spy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I like that
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, I was just the right. worry is like if it backfires. And so
you get caught in a lie.
Right. You have to be careful what you say in front of your ally.
Yeah, yeah, if the parrot is like, I'm going to betray everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Be like, you know, someone's talking about gonna vote out Joey Amazing. Joey Amazing.
Yeah.
Thanks, Liana. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be so funny. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about the next question of the week. So what I have thought about is a quote that was said by David Wright on this episode. What is it like to be Joey Amazing? So that is the next question of the week. What is it like to be Joey Amazing? So to give a little bit of an idea, you can take this in whatever direction you want. But my first thought was, he's driving. He must hit all the green lights. Like, that's what it's like to be Joey Amazing. So
please
submit.
That's a good metaphor.
I thought so, too. I thought that would be a good representative, like what it must be like to be this guy. So please feel free to write in and contact us. Oh, actually, you know what? I have a email that I received from Mike Bloom not a few minutes ago. And it is a question that was written into us. So I'm going to go ahead and read that and we can try to answer it now. So Lauren wrote in and said, it looks like next week the Edge of Extinction tribe will be competing in the jailbreak challenge where you tie sticks together to reach a key. On a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you guys to have Chris Underwood in a challenge where Jeff screams about his long and strong pole?
Oh, that's like the tip of the iceberg. Like that is going to be amazing, or maybe that's not the right. I wanted to say the icing on top of the cake, I guess. Like that's going to be so fun to watch Jeff just like overdo it with the that's what she said line.
Just can't get it in.
Yeah, the balls and the long strong poles. You know, I there's just so much gold. I love all of it. I don't even care.
You've got to maneuver that pole exactly into that tiny hole.
Yeah. Chris lifting his pole. It's quite erect now.
That is a long pole. It is going to be
but
tough.
Is it long enough?
It is going to be tough to figure out exactly how to get it where you want it.
Yeah. Is it stiff enough? Ugh.
It is long, but is it stiff?
Oh, goodness. All right. Well, thanks, Lauren, for that question. Hopefully.
It's not enough to just be long.
It's also got to be strong.
Well, hopefully, I think the answer to the question is 10, is how excited
yes.
we are.
Yes. 12.
And, I mean, we didn't talk... I feel like we didn't quite address enough, like, how exciting it is going to be to have this challenge. Like, it's going to be so epic to see these. Like, first of all, the reaction in the preview to the newbie or, like, the returners coming in, like, that was super fun. Like, I can't wait to see it, like, actually play out in real time. It's going to be super fun.
It's going to be just like the amazing Outcast twist, which we all love.
Right. And is remembered and beloved by all.
And it's just going to be so interesting to see, like, where it goes. Like, we don't even know. Is one person getting in? Two? What's the situation?
Yeah, and I think we're still at that time with the Edge of Extinction twist where there is stuff that is unknown. And so it's exciting to, one, have us learn about it for the first time, but also see the players learn about it for the first time. You know, like, oh, yeah, that secret advantage that just showed up randomly in Aubrey's bag. Edge of Extinction, you know, so it's going to be sort of interesting to have all of that come together. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, again, okay, so back to the question of the week. Much like Lauren, you can write in with your own questions or your answer to the question of the week. You can email us at rhapbnb@gmail.com or feel free to respond to us on Twitter using the hashtag RHAPB, the letter N, the letter B. Or in the Rob Has a Podcast Patreon group, feel free to go ahead and give us your answers, questions, suggestions, general thoughts about Chris Underwood and, you know, Jeff screaming about his long and strong pull. We're interested in all of it. So thank the two of you. Thank you too for coming on and playing a silly food-based game and talking about all things Survivor. The Real Weird Sisters, Martha and Alice, how can people reach out to you on social media?
Yeah, so first of all, I am personally on Twitter at Real Weird Martha, and Alice is at Alice Oslesson. You want to spell that?
Well, it's A-S-L-E-S-O-N.
And you can find our podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. It's called The Real Weird Sisters, a Harry Potter podcast. We're on Twitter as our podcast at Real Weird Sister. Lots of different Sorting Hat episodes that we've done. And we're also a regular weekly book club format where we're going chapter by chapter through the Harry Potter series. We just recently recapped, now I can't even remember,
chapter
in Half-Blood Prince.
16? 15?
Yeah.
Somewhere around in there.
Yes. A sluggish memory is the 70. Chapter. Yeah. Of Half-Blood Prince, which is the sixth book. So we've got about a year left of the book club format, and it's been a really fun ride. We're so happy to have come on the RHAP B&B once again.
Yeah. Thank you, Liana. Thank you, Mike, for not being here so that we could be.
for mic dropping.
Yeah. We dropped Mike off this podcast, and it was so fun. So thank you, Liana.
Of course. And actually, you know, if people are more interested in hearing more from the two of you on the Rob Has a Podcast Network and are interested particularly in the Harry Potter stuff, for sure, check out the Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast with the two of these wonderful ladies. It was so much fun. And Rob and Akiva don't know much about, or didn't know much about Harry Potter now that you two have educated them.
They still don't know much, I don't think. Although Rob is very proud to tell people that he's a Hufflepuff.
Yeah, I heard that. It's like, oh, he still remembers. So yes, so definitely feel free to check that out. So next week, Mike Bloom at a Mike Bloom type on social media will be back at the B&B, and we will be joined by our special guest, Antonio Mazzaro. So very much looking forward to that. Follow me on social media. I am at Liana Boras, LianaBoraas. I'm also doing the Drag Race podcast. So this past week, Mike was not here. So Brent, myself, and Rockstar from Big Brother got together to talk about RuPaul's Drag Race. And this coming week, we're going to be talking with Allie Lasher. Again, Mike will be out. So me, Brent, and Allie will be talking about Drag Race. I was also on, speaking of Rob and Akiva Anita podcast, I was the host / arbiter of Rob and Akiva Stan something, where we went through a bracket of user or listener submitted ideas, and we talked about all of them. So just to give you a little bit of an idea, the first round we talked about eggs versus Bette Midler, and broke everything down in a bracket, where we now are stans of one particular idea. I don't want to spoil it, but it was so much fun. So special thanks to Scott St. Pierre for putting all of this together, Will from America for our theme song, our head writer Paul Oslesson, and thank you all for listening, and we'll check you out at your next stay.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the RHAPBMB. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R.